I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for rolling with me and my special guest, Travis Stroop. We had Travis on a couple weeks ago. Now we got him in the studio live. Thanks for joining, Travis.
Thank you kindly for having me.
All right, I'm going to need you to scooch on over a little bit. We always got to do that thing with the, It floats a little bit, that one there. You know how we do. Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, good morning.
Well, good morning.
Well, and thanks for being in the book club with me. You know, I'm realizing that this book club on the show has a lot less structure than a lot of the way that I envision clubs. You know, I think about like the same people showing up with their little cup of coffee and, you know, once a month you meet and you do this. But that, I find that people jump in, you know, but people stop me on the street and they say, hey, this is a book that really meant something to me. And I heard you talking about it the other day. And that's exactly how we got in a book club together.
It's like how it is around here. It's like an organic formation of how things happen. Yeah. Because, you know, structured is one thing. That's like what we do in our yard when we plant stuff and purposely like move things around. But then when we want to feel at ease, we go into nature where everything is unstructured somewhat, we think, you know.
Mm-hmm. And let that spinning wheel spin. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and read the poem because in the subject of flow, that is touched on here in the poem on time, where we try to squeeze things into boundaries that don't exist in nature.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are not familiar with the show, we in the second hour, we while away the apocalypse by getting cultured. Self-awareness, spirituality, and literature. We're reading The Prophet by Khalil Gibran right now, which encompasses all of that. Great beauty. And it's the premise is Al-Mustafa is a seeker and a sage, and he's been living in the land of Orphalese for 12 years in exile. And we now await the arrival of Al-Mustafa's ship, which is seen on the horizon. And he begins to walk down to the water, and the villagers surround him and walk with him. And then the high priestess Almitra meets him outside of the temple and asks, as we wait for the ship, would you tell us what you've observed of us over these years so that we may collect these wisdoms and they will never die. We will give them to our children and then to theirs. And Al-Mustafa says, there is not that I can tell you that you don't already know. And yet I'll sit here and kick it with you because my boat is over there. It's going to be a couple of hours. So everyone comes up and has a question, and today we have an astronomer who said, Master, what of time? And he answered, you would measure time, the measureless and the immeasurable. You would adjust your conduct and even direct the course of your spirit according to hours and seasons. Of time, you would make a stream upon whose bank you would sit and watch its flowing. Yet the timeless in you is aware of life's timelessness and knows that yesterday is but today's memory and tomorrow is today's dream. And that which sings and contemplates in you is still dwelling within the bounds of that first moment which scattered the stars into space. And who among you does not feel that his power to love is boundless? And yet, who does not feel that very love, though boundless, encompassed within the center of his being, and moving not from love thought to love thought, nor from love deeds to other love deeds? And is not time, even as love is, undivided and paceless? But if in your thought you must measure time into seasons, let each season encircle all the other seasons, and let today embrace the past with remembrance and the future with longing. Khalil Gibran, the prophet, on time.
Yeah. The shortest poem in the book, I believe.
Yeah?
On time.
Yeah. That's good, because I don't have time to be reading all these poems. Keep it short.
Yes. Well, no. It seems like almost related to our fascination with life and death. Like, one measurement that they use a lot in science, it's like entropy. Things that kind of fall apart. All things from a distance start to fall apart. Like the velocification of sound. When you hear a siren passing by, it sounds different in different tones from a distance than it does close up. And as it goes, you hear it start to slowly change in vibration, which changes the tone, you know. And I was just looking at something the other day where almost all things have a sort of dying off, a falling apart sort of measurement in them, except for harmonics, which is vibration. And so that kind of like messes with your whole foundation of what it's like to take something like time or distance or anything and choose a vector. The vector is your point of measurement. You know what I mean? And just thinking about, like, how does that apply to how we see each other? Do we see each other as points of measurement? Of course we do. We seem to judge each other
and ourselves
constantly off of these random points of measurement. So our mind is doing this math all the time. And I was wondering, is it to get to the point so that we see how to balance the harmonics? Because harmonics, if they increase as they expand, it might be like, you know, one of the things that we've discovered, and maybe there's many more to come, that don't involve entropy. And this whole thought of death was a miscalculation of a dying off of an energy or vibration. Everything vibrates, you know.
Sydney Poitier is just reading Plato in the last hour, the eternal nature of the soul, and the idea that very same idea. And it goes, I think I'm about to conflate that with the Alan Watts that you sent me that I did listen to this morning before coming on the air. Can you remind the audience? Because my short-term memory is...
Alan Watts on The Joker.
The Joker, yes. Right? There are some people who believe that the vibration of the universe is looking to quiet that vibration, exactly what you're saying. That if the Big Bang is eventually going to reverberate out and nothing will exist anymore, mm-hmm. eventually at some point. And then what Alan Watts is saying is that he believes that if there is an end, then there is a beginning. Because that silence is where the Big Bang came from. And so we don't have to measure our life against death because everything is eternal. Even the beginning came from an end.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's the paradox of life, too. It's both things at once.
Right.
It's the path to hell is paved with good intentions. You know what I mean? Like the paradox of life.
Yeah, I thought I was helping.
I think that, you know, as important as it is for us to feel these things and try to communicate them and like, you know, at the same time in the paradox, I also know that it doesn't matter what I know. You know, I'm old enough now to know that you forget more than you learn. It's...
Yes. So... On that, I want to bring the quote that got left in the cutting room floor that I'm just so sad about, where you measured the length, because I asked you how long you had known.
Isatu.
Isatu, yes. That I was like, how long have you known them? And you said, I don't know. And you started to calculate and you were like, time is measured by experiences.
Mm. For me, yes.
Yeah. And I really liked that.
It's a problem.
It's a problem if somebody pokes their head out of the studio and is like, Travis, come on, I gotta open the mic.
Well, and then you mentioned the earlier, like as you were doing the announcements, you said April 1st, and that's the only thing I caught when I was walking around and suddenly panicked. I haven't paid rent.
I know. It's so funny. I heard someone talking last night about this morning about the movement and Neptune again. I was like, I thought I had another week before it was the 30th that I wanted to talk about that again. But yeah, we're all like on planets and you know, I'm like, what's the actual date?
Right. Yes. And that's when I think yesterday we were talking about it, timing and times. One of the times I really try to pay attention to is the natural timing, the moon and, you know, certain cycles that are for sure. But when we were talking yesterday about memories, and this is how you try to calculate time, memories, and then you try to project what can happen next, and you're in these two worlds. But the flow, the magic for me happens when I can get into my primal impression, which is what my senses are telling me right now, you know, and try to quiet the voice in your head of before and after, because that's the only time when I'm doing art that I'm playing. And playing, it has to happen. I can't think about what customers want, what's the thing. You know, it's either my genuine self or it's nothing, you know, and I've realized that by making the mistake of trying to cater to what's going to sell. That's my mind in the future, you know what I mean? Or what sold before, that's my mind in the past. When, from what I've understood from the exchange in this marketplace in Madrid, is that people are also buying a part of you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And if you're not doing your genuine self, your art doesn't reflect that. And it's hard to explain. You're trying to figure out in this market how to do it according to capitalism.
Yeah.
But that's not what we engage in here. We engage in vibration. People roll through and they're taking pictures of us while we're talking. You know what I mean? In various spots that we're at, they see some kind of magic. They're going to try to capture it on the iPhone. And they come home, and then they're like, oh, I didn't get it. You know, it's like that whole magic of New Mexico, too, for tourists, it's spiritual. They can just feel like they're right on the edge of seeing it. And I don't know, I'm starting to wander off into the weeds all of a sudden. But,
that's all right. That's all
but,
right.
Yeah, you know what I mean. If we're half as cool as they think we are, we're pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. No, we're the coolest.
But at the same time, it doesn't even matter. Like, the vibration is not something we can do. It's sort of like that Zen thing, like as soon as you try, you missed it.
Oh, man. Everybody need to check out this Alan Watts that he sent me this morning, because that was on it, too. You know, so I was like, you can't tell me what I'm missing, bro. It's Alan Watts and the Joker. But it's true. It's like you can't be spontaneous. You can't plan it. You know?
Well, it reminds me of a poem that he was was on one of his programs. It's like a Zen, Japanese Zen poem. You know, two Zen masters pass each other in the forest. Not a word was said. A thief knows a thief. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And in on the Buddhist side, like, you know, when people say, you know, the magic that you're, you know, this feeling that we're trying to project to each other can't be written down and communicated, yet it has been. And the answer from the master was something towards the effect of, well, it shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. Because two people watching a sunset, no words need to be said about what is really going on. So I feel sometimes for us, when we throw everything in a pot, like our emotions, our feelings, and all this stuff, it's like we're trying to make a soup, a harmonic of some kind, of an amalgamation of all the different elements that we all have. And we're trying to do that, yet we've already done it. The paradox, you know. People are already coming here and trying to dip from our soup pot and experience it for a moment, and then they go home with these fishing stories. Like, I saw the coolest place in the world, you know. And that small magical experience becomes a huge thing in their mind, and that gets back to our conversation on memories yesterday about how your body is replacing cells at all times, mm-hmm. you know? So in the subject of time, like every 7 years or so, we're replaced. Does time start over at that point? But if time is related to memories and our brain cells are being replaced and memories get transferred to new cells, memories change, you know? So there's all of that. Sometimes we might shift them towards our bias or what our heart wants, you know? And that's where we get into the weeds of where some people have gone too far.
Yeah. I found that to be so fascinating, our bias.
It is. I mean, you never hear parents say kids grow up so slow, because time moves different for parents as a group, you know, and it's measured by the size of your child and how they grow up. And that becomes a form of measurement. And it seems really fast because it's enjoyable at times and it's intense. It's got its highs and lows. It takes you to the far ends of a spectrum, you know, of protection. You think you're protective, and then suddenly you're responsible for a small person's life, and that goes to the next level, you know. And so that changes time itself. Mm-hmm. Like everything that we deal with changes time. The amount of experiences, the lack of experiences, you know, it's like fast, slow, all these different things. Or it's none of that. Maybe the paradox applies to time, and we're not seeing that, you know, we're just doing the same thing every day, which is, you know, what may have led to some of the philosophers' thoughts of this being like, you know, a testing ground for souls. That's where you get into the Matrix and they're like some of the, but, you know, you can't just say that you enjoy the moment, be in the moment. That's really tone deaf to someone who doesn't have all of the faculties together to be out of survival mode. You know what I mean? So a lot of spirituality doesn't apply timing wise to someone's current situation.
Or does it? Like, and bear with me, because I kind of knew this morning I was going to go into this place of feeling like, of sounding like a spiritual bypass person. I always have to acknowledge that lane as a lane. However, if we let go of everything, if we let go of judgment of what is happening to someone, and this is a very tricky situation because we have to assess our capacity for compassion and understand that I am full of compassion for someone going through an unimaginable grief or pain or abuse in front of me right now. But if I let go of my ego to say that I know why that's happening, that I know what that soul is here to represent or experience, if I know the karmic journey of those players, if I let that go, then I have to accept that they are meant to experience what they're experiencing unbeknownst to me, and therefore be in the moment of that experience, take from it what the soul's journey is, even if that is liberation from this plane, meaning death, murder, whatever, to transcend that karma and have your next incarnation, if the soul is an eternal nature. And it sounds really rough. I've been saved from drowning. So I'm saying that as a person who did almost die in front of people, but someone, you know, and I know that it was my karma to be saved. It might be someone else's karma not to be, you know what I mean? Like, because I wouldn't be here doing so, doing what I'm doing with purpose if I hadn't almost died. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anybody deserves to be bombed to oblivion or whatever these things are that it's hard to attach to, but I don't know.
When we were speaking yesterday, we touched on the matter of someone needs to be ready. I think it's like understanding when they're ready, you know, because if you approach something like on a substance abuse topic, something like that, it doesn't always hit at the right time because they're not ready to receive the information. So sometimes you need to back off a bit and just acknowledge their feelings. Like one of the things we forget about in communication is you don't have to agree with anybody. That's not your contract. But when someone is expressing their feelings, you can acknowledge that something has made them feel that way because that's a fact. Mm-hmm. And just in doing that, you can raise the level of the conversation to where it's not combative. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Like you have to kind of drop that first because emotion, it does crazy things to us. I ripped my bicep a couple of weeks ago, lifting something I knew was too heavy in anger. You know what I mean? It's that emotional content that makes your words and everything sharper and stronger and maybe cross a boundary that doesn't need to even be there because someone didn't acknowledge your feelings. And so you keep putting them out there. But if you snuff that out at the beginning of a conversation and say, oh, you know, I can be with you in your feelings right now. Like I can tell you're riled. You deserve to feel this way because whatever led you to this point feels like this. My experience is different. Do you mind if I share it with you? And so you understand that there can be two different experiences happening at once.
So many experiences.
Yes.
So many experiences happening at the same time. That I wanted to circle back to what you were saying about being oneself in this town, in life, in art. I'm coming to just beginning to accept that as I try to grow my podcast and be myself in the world. And the other little art projects that I'm picking up to train myself out of, oh, I could sell that. No, it just is. Like the money is going to get figured out because it just will. But I've been here trying to be something and make money off of something when it's me. Like the extra that I show up with on any job site, with any project, with this show is people want to listen to my take on it with the person. You can listen to, you know, a different podcast for a different experience. You know what I mean? I think I used the analogy when we were standing out there of my friend who's a reader, and we talked about me doing readings. And I was like, well, there don't need to be any more readers in this town. And, you know, you got this. You know, it's like some people are going to come just for you because they want the way that you're going to translate, the way you're going to approach them, that they might not vibe with me. And it's the vibration. If we all just would be, it's a whole different way to experience life. And I'm trying to get there. I'm like, where is my joy?
Right.
Am I really put here to try to just express and not strive? What would my life be like if I didn't feel an obligation to show up and do something about this world that I've judged and deemed to be inhospitable and cruel, you know?
That's another paradox. I mean, that involves, this is something that's interesting, that the ego, because I worry about, like, you know, I've always felt like I needed to push the good, push the vibration higher. And then having the realization that the vibration is always changing. Everything is always changing. Change is inevitable. With or without me, things are going to change. And then once you get in that mindset of, okay, it's not all me, just because it's my senses that are feeling and seeing it all, that doesn't mean that I am involved in it all. You know, it's like making art and just letting it go afterwards. That, you know, the connection, the ego connection, is a strange one. We all see the universe from this vector, our point of reference. We measure everything from here. And we all want to feel like we're good, but we're also bad. It's the paradox. And so I've been kind of hooked on that lately just realizing it's always both. But, you know, being involved at the right timing, that's like playing music. You know what I mean? So when you enter a conversation with the vibration that you want to help somebody and their timing is right and the timing is received, there's a vibrational drum circle happening in the conversation that has nothing to do with the words. It has to do with the vibrations going back and forth and someone being uplifted to that next level of, you know, meeting us in the song. So...
Yes, you know, you're bringing me to the idea of words, you know, and describing the sunset was what you were saying. These words are agreements of measurement that we have. And who am I as an African-American bass player to tell somebody they don't have a rhythm? So I went to the club the other day. I was like, what are these people dancing to? That is not the beat. But it's like...
I struggle with
But it's true though, because we call tempo timing. And when you're sitting here and I'm like playing music, I'm like, no, there is a structure to that we call time. And does that blow a hole in the whole like going with the flow aspect of time? And it's like, no, like it still comes to ego and me looking at people saying you should be on 2 and 4. And they're like, I'm feeling 1 and 5. What do you care? You know? Right. And it's like, it's got nothing to do with me. You know, but if we are playing a song together and we have an agreed upon sensation, you know, an agreed upon vibe, this song is this vibe, then we're going to come together with certain tones and tempos and beats and timings that we agree upon in that group. You know, I want to give respect to the eclipse, the solar eclipse that happened this morning, very in the wee hours. And the line where Gibran would say, the opening line, you would measure time, the measureless and the immeasurable. You would adjust your conduct and even direct the course of your spirit according to hours and seasons. And you and I have talked about the seasons as being kind of a clock. And when we were talking about that yesterday, I was thinking about, even as I study astrology, that there are different schools of it. And some people measure how the planets move and adjust yearly for the till. And, you know, like, so even when we're trying to use a regular calendar based upon the movements of the planets, it's not current. Right. And so there are many people who are today experiencing a new year, believing that, that after this first spring eclipse that brings the true new year, and how we're all measuring time differently even though we operate on an agreed upon calendar when we have an appointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think about trees. I like tree poems. The best time to plant a tree 10 years ago, the next best time is today. Mm-hmm. You know, in that it's like bringing you into the moment, like this moment right now is something that affects 10 years from now greatly. You know, we see these elm trees full of all of these new seeds are coming up right now. And if anyone doesn't know, right when there's moisture in the air, and really right now when they're starting to pop up and they're young, just eat them straight off the tree. They are sweet. It tastes like salad. But right after a rain, they're specifically nice. And there's, of course, everyone knows there's billions of them. And each one of those, to me, it I think of a tree like a person. And each seed is an idea. And they're all good ideas. And they just get thrown everywhere. And then they do well in places that they're natural elements all come together in a harmonic to make the perfect situation. And so what is the tree's job? To put out as many ideas as possible. And so when we're having these conversations and we're looking at books and we're going deep into our community, we're throwing out ideas. You know, we're constantly creating new seeds. And even though they might be the same seeds we've been thinking of forever, eventually we're going to come across a spot that no one thought to plant a seed or something. And so I feel like this station, you know, has that same connection in my mind. It's just throwing out seeds. You know, I've been able to listen to genres of music I never would have dreamed of. I mean, acid polka. I mean, and so for me, though, it's just musicians out there throwing out seeds, and then those seeds landed somewhere, created a tree, and then somehow ended up at this tree, and just throwing out vibrations. And at some point, there's going to be a harmonic that happens, this jaw-dropping. And that, I feel like, is what we all feel like could be our evolution. The point that we're trying to get to, a point where that spot in your heart is just vibrating so high that when you see another person, you see the vast universe of spirit through their eyes, and we all feel suddenly very connected. Like, I think that, you know, there's a lot of sci-fi movies and books that try to, like, recreate that. Maybe even religion has created a lot of stories of, you know, how everyone's going to somehow come together and realize that, you know, how to be in the moment. But right now, you know, throwing out these ideas is what we're doing, creating the seeds. And hopefully good medicine as they land in the right spots. And that's the interesting thing about Madrid. Being small, we have a greater ability to try things. And so the reason this place feels like today, the word today, is because I've been in today for years. And this place is exactly like Garberville, Arcata areas in Humboldt, Jamaica, Middlesex, you know, in certain little villages we were at, Costa Rica, you know, same thing like with the bikers and the tourists and the whole, I mean, and someone opening up a local grocery store, a farm starting to do local produce, like all of the little bits and pieces that form a community. And you can do more experimental things when there's a smaller group, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's hard being on the radio. I just want to take a minute and just let all that soak in, you know. But there's such a thing as a dead air rule. We can't let it sit for more than a couple seconds. Alarms will go off and, you know, this and that. Play. Let's talk about play real quick. You told me yesterday we need a joker. And I thought about that in the sense that we were looking for a wild card to shake stuff up. And I was talking about the trend of, I'm just filling the audience in, you remember, but audience, I'm filling you in on our conversation, was there's a meme trend going on now where folks are like, what Stephen King novel are you in, you know, or Stephen King story are we in right today when you look at the news? But I've been looking at it like, which Batman movie, you know, and that Trump is the Joker and this little team of wild supervillains and superheroes that we all are, because we are, speaking of Neptune, we are players in the theater of life that we have imagined, collectively agreed on an imagined scenario. Several are happening at the same time. So much that we call, that it's a trend to call people NPCs, non-playing characters. Mm-hmm. Like, we have disassociated with some people that don't really have an active role in our life, but walk by or exist. If those players are the main characters in their own lives, right? But we all seem to be right now, many of us who choose to be, subjected to a vision, a collective vision of life in America, which involves heroes and villains, and some supervillains. So in this study of life and the play, Trump is the Joker. I don't know who Batman is. Probably George Clooney Batman. It's one of the bad ones. And then we have, you know, everybody's assigned our roles. But we have to remember that what are we playing? What are we playing at? And you know what I mean? We have a choice of our characters.
I feel like we're almost creating our other game out here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're very insulated in this bubble out here. That's why it's interesting to the outside world. I mean, we don't experience everything in America the way they experience it in Shrivelization, for instance. You know what I mean? They're in the heat of it. Out here, we have protections built in place because we're allowed to think outside of the box and then act on it, you know?
So tell me about your Joker, where you were coming from with it, because then I sent you the little meme off of one of the things, and it was the Batman and the Joker and Pokemon or whatever, and then you sent me, that's when you sent me the Alan Watts, which covered the Joker that you specifically made. You said it was one of your favorites. Tell the audience a little bit more about what you mean by "we need a Joker."
Well, you think about revolution. What's the whole point? Trying to think out of the box. All these different word things, the word salads, subverting the dominant paradigm. The reason that we do that, the reason that there's outliers is because we forget why we're doing what we're doing. For instance, there was an experiment, and I don't condone experiments on animals, but you know, you've got four monkeys in a room, and you put a banana on top of a ladder. And one of them goes up there to get that banana, and someone sprays a mist of water on the other three, and they get angry about it. So they beat up that monkey that went for the banana. Mm. And so they change out that monkey that was beaten with another monkey, and this monkey has a rain jacket on. And that monkey's new to the group, doesn't understand what's going on, so goes for the banana. Those three beat up that monkey. And so eventually they keep replacing all of them, and suddenly none of them will go for the banana, and they don't understand why. At some point, the habit has continued throughout, even though you've removed everyone from the original setup. And I feel like we're in that situation now. We don't remember why we're doing the things we're doing. You know, we don't remember what started the great wars or permissions for killing people in the name of God, you know, which is always seems to be the root of killing people. The big excuse, like, I'm still going to heaven because I'm forgiven. You know, that kind of vibration of thinking that there's no action we need to take. You know, of course we need to stop this stuff. We need to stop people from thinking that we're just doing all this because this is how it's done. We don't know how it's done. We haven't even gotten to the beginning of how it's done. You know, in the great history of this planet, you break it down into 24 hours, we're in the last minute. Last few seconds. That's humanity. This is us figuring it out in the last little... We haven't, you know, so I feel like that's my hope for the next generation, that they take whatever leg up we can give them, because when I was young, that's all I wanted. And then you go through that whole thing where you have to become the thing that you need. And then look back and give that leg up to those who are coming up so that they have the voice. They have the vibration and can take it to that next level until the harmonics are reached. And then it's magic. Then it's a movement. I don't know if you've ever seen the YouTube video about it's beautiful, like the creation of a movement. Like it takes one idiot, the Joker. And so there's all these people sitting around. There's a concert going on. Nobody's dancing. One guy gets out there and is a complete fool, is in himself, like no other thing happening around him. He's just moving his body to the beat. And it becomes a thing. Like one other person walks up, starts dancing with this guy. Two people is an affirmation. You get three people over there, suddenly it becomes something else outside of an affirmation. And suddenly five people, and it's not cool to be on the outside anymore. Everybody needs to be part of that because that's where it's at. And it took the one person, the Joker, to start the whole thing, to not care what he was going to look like, to be the fool and create the movement.
Word. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And it does work for what I'm saying about Trump. It's the disruptor. It's not always a funny, fun look. Sometimes they're seen as demons, some of these tricksters, and are really stirring things up in a way that we don't want them stirred up because we've been asleep so long that we now need a rude awakening, you know, as opposed to one in jest and fun. You know what I mean? So it's a terror kind of clown that we have right now. Some people reference the court jester, the role of the jester, the role of the koshari or the kachina in the native culture, you know, like we do need that shake up and the balance of what I'm calling now gravity and levity, how I approach the doom of the times. I like to fancy myself a joker. I want to work harder on that, you know. We got to laugh to keep from crying, as my mom would say. Mm-hmm. You know, but we do need that shakeup. And it's great when we can, that we've assigned that role to the fool, which has the potential to turn tears into laughter. And we'll make it through all of this.
Yes, we will.
I'm going to let you have the last word here.
Oh, big love to the village. I feel very loved and appreciated here, and, you know, I don't say much, but I hope you guys feel it.
Well, you should, because a lot of people really did enjoy our last interview, and for those of you who missed it, go over to In the Cab Radio at Linktree or In the Cab Radio at Instagram or Facebook, and you'll see links to the archives. Appreciate you, as always. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.